We'll date the tape. This is March 22nd, 1998. And we're gathered for a combination meeting, some business, and some pleasure, I guess. One of the pleasurable things that we get to do each day, almost each day, and sometimes more than once, is to read messages from the folks out there. This one here comes from Colorado. It says, "Dear crew of the Phoenix Source Distributors, this order will complete all the journals produced by you to date. I'm so happy that I have these volumes that were banned also. With all this information, I have enough information to last me at least two lifetimes. Ha ha. Whenever I run low on current information, I go back and study what I've already read. I don't know how to thank all you folks, as well as Doris and EJ, for your personal sacrifices that you have suffered in getting this truth out to us who believe. Love in His light, from Colorado." Those do come quite frequently. And since the commander put us on notice on Friday that he wanted to finish this book, and there were only six chapters left for the next paper, I contemplated, now how in the world are we going to do six writings between now and Monday noon, which is the last possible time we can get anything in the paper? Well, I must report to all of you that she did four writings yesterday and three this morning, because the commander came up with one extra one. I presume the commander is ready. Here's our editor-in-chief coming back, and maybe we can begin.
Well, commander is here in the light of radiance. We're making incredible strides. And I realize, not just Norma, but every time I do a writing, or we do a writing, and we do four of them, and then we do three more of them the day before the paper has to go, that means everybody on the team has to work extra hours, and I apologize for that. Not enough to quit. Just, I want you to know I recognize it, I appreciate it, and I don't want any complaining, because after all, Ray Bilger is the only one who can complain because he had a baby. And sometimes it's much harder on the father than on the mother. And would anybody like to introduce our new baby? Well, I realized that. I thought we could get some information about it on the record, but we'll let it go.
Ray's here. He's right there.
I know. Surely Ray remembers his son's name. And if there's any marvelous tales to be told, now's the time.
Hi. The baby was born on March the 16th. In the lovely city of Bakersfield, and we've named him Raymond Daniel Mark Bilger, but we're going to call him Daniel because I've told people that the Raymond is silent like the H in Hatton. And it was a very interesting experience at the hospital. I was with the baby the whole time in the nursery, but Janet, in recovery and being transported down to the room, was with Al and Della. And Janet felt that there was a nurse that was there that she said that she wasn't supposed to be there, but she was sent there just to be especially for Janet. And she prayed for Janet and for the baby and said some interesting things that were similar to what were included in a writing from Commander on Tuesday, March the 17th, that would indicate that the baby was special. Well, all babies are special, so I didn't get to see any of that.
Well, some are more equal than others.
I won't argue with that. But the mother and the baby are doing fine. It was a cesarean section, so there's a little bit of more recovery time for mom. And they're both out at home, and they're listening right now So I'll say, hi, Janet. Hi, baby. And that's about all I have to say.
I may want to say something a little bit later. Because the first thing that I want to go into is some business. There always comes this time when we are so busy that board meetings don't get held and we need regular types of meetings, so we need to discuss one or two things. I'm not going to dive off into lawsuits and who's being nasty to who, because you're going to be able to figure out who these nasty characters are by the time we're through with this series. It's very important to the adversary to get a better foothold and get his foot across your neck. And I know that all of you are very, very curious, and I do continue to get messages from out there. Sir, what can we do? What can we do about the Teuton thing? What can we do about the extra thing? Shouldn't we be doing something? I'm sorry I didn't do something sooner, this sort of thing. I want to talk about it just a minute. The Institute is bound at this moment. It's too late, really, to go in and undo what Teuton and her attorney were able to do. Had it been something filed immediately, you could have stopped this, but it went. So, as I have to say about all things past, we have to let it go, and what do we do now? There are two or three ways to go, and you can hardly ever talk to these things, about these things, to attorneys. They always know better. They are trained to know different. We can literally file papers now. We've been in touch, or at least Mr. Ellie's been in touch with Extra and their legal crew. And, of course, they say, well, they tried to get in touch with the Eckers, and they tried this and they tried that, like they always do, and like they always do, trying to cover their rear. On the other hand, this now puts into motion and saves a space, if you will, on the statute of limitations for a time that something can be brought forth. Now, the obvious thing, if you were just trying to get a little money, which I know everybody thinks we could use a little of, but to go and sue or join in a suit or whatever with anyone, the Phoenix Institute, the Eckers, etc., against Extra, would not seem to me to be the way to go. Because they're going to turn around and they're going to sue the pants off the ones who gave them the information. Now that sounds good, except that if you're already entangled in litigation, it is not so easy to get those people on your side. So it would appear to me maybe the best way to go is to bring a countersuit against Teuton in Las Vegas, naming these other parties and lumping it in with some of you other ones. And whether we name Extra at this point or not, we will always be able to pull them in, subpoena them in for testimony. So I believe that that can be structured. I believe that any of you or all of you could do a countersuit right now. It's just on hold. Mr. Ellie's going to go down and talk to that lawyer who is as guilty of malpractice as anything I have experienced. He obviously was working with Abbott because he had all of Abbott's records. On the other hand, I do not believe that Betty Teuton knows a thing about her own case, or even if she still has one. And this is just an atrocity in your judicial system that this can be allowed to go on and on and on. This lawyer months ago was told that he had no case structure. What is your complaint? His first paperwork had no complaint, just did a lot of complaining, but there was no, it had no plot, if you will. And, of course, immediately the answer went back. On the other hand, time was running, and from the very beginning, if you do not timely respond, by default goes into these restrictions on your corporation. So already we were pending that, and they managed to dink around and just squeeze in on the day or the day after the arguments enough that, well, we might have been able to do something. But then the next deadline got confused. And so you're locked down. You're in lockdown as far as the Institute is concerned, which may actually turn out to be the best thing that's happened to you. Time has gone on enough now that some restrictions could be lifted, but not off the Institute. And what they did was tie up gold while the bottom dropped out of it. That's not good. Because if you can't use a corporation, you can't do anything with it during that period of time. So I guess we'll let that go too. I wanted this on the record. There have been some people that have helped us so that we could go ahead and get these massive papers out and a few other things to keep us going. And their input has been put into total security, has nothing to do with anything that's gone on before. Is there anything that anybody would like to add about these lawsuits? Mr. Tipps is getting himself in deeper and deeper. Let me tell you about Mr. Tipps' attorney. Very nice man. Came into court, met with Judge Wallace and the Eckers on that first time, and Judge Wallace was kind enough. He just looked the situation over and said, "This case is mine now." In other words, he's not going to let go of it. He knows we've been dinked around all of this time. On the other hand, the law firm that is handling for Scott Tipps will not respond to the interrogatories. You see, he had one insurance company and that covered him for a lot more than they're claiming now at the time that the incident, they call it the incident, happened. Well, obviously, Mr. Horn is waiting around so he can see what's going to happen with Eckers in case they get any money. And I'm sorry, Mr. Horn, that money's already assigned. Somebody has to keep some help coming in. So it's assigned away. This man demanded that he be supplied with copies of all of the file, which is 13 boxes of files, and we'll make them available, was the answer. So boxes of them were taken down, and what did it cost them?
$9,000.
Just Eckers' portion. They're going to get all of Mr. Ellie's, too. That's going to be another $9,000 or $12,000. And there is nothing in those files relating to anything regarding the incident. Nothing. Zilch. So life goes on in this Khazarian world. And it's time to bring you up to date on it. And I think, Nora, there is no reason to retype most of these minutes. Just toss a tape into the file so that if we need to refer to it, we can. Is there any business that should come before the board? Any advisors? Well, there being no more apparent business to bring before the board, let's adjourn the meeting. Can I hear a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Meeting's adjourned. Today's going to be probably long. We may end up having to cut it short. You're going to have to listen to some reading. You're going to have to listen to me make some explanations. If you have been keeping up with these papers, you're going to recognize having heard a lot, but I can promise you that unless you got them this morning, you don't know what's in these. As of yesterday evening, we were talking about the Kahila element in Poland. I think it's extremely important that we talk about these things, because the perceptions out there are that, oh my God, they're anti-Semitic, they're talking about the Jews, and they have just really laid this out. And the reason it's so important for us to talk about it is that, as I said, the dragon is raising its head and shaking it and saying, oh, get them. Well, they're not going to get anything except maybe hanged. They've overplayed their hand again. Now, according to what is coming over the news, all of you can look at these people and know which ones are out of the Khazarian reptilian races. There has been a concerted effort for a couple of millennium, really, to build up interracial circumstances so that nobody knows what they are. Now, that's the point. And today we're going to reinforce, re-talk about Yiddish. And that doesn't have anything to do with these Judeans either. We're going to handle the word Jew, who literally called themselves Yiddish, and they're out of the Khazarian race, right out of the Khazarian Empire. And I'm tired of people saying you don't know anything, and I would go back with the day that Tim Rush called from EIR to Rick and said, stop running this stuff. What business it is of his, really, I find remarkable in the first place. In the second place, oh, you keep talking about the Khazars and the this and the that. Quit running this stuff. It just makes the Anti-Defamation League mad, and it plays this, and he didn't make 10 words of sense other than stop running it. Well, up his. I don't tell them what to put in their paper, but I may start.
Commander?
Yes.
I would add just one point. I think everybody can hear me well enough about that situation. Your big microphone's on, isn't it? And that is, the anecdote to that was, not only did he tell us not to do that, but he said, why don't we do something useful and constructive like they're doing, which is bring a voice choir to Washington, D.C. to sing.
Right. Thank you. I would not have recalled that important mission.
It's called shell shock.
If you don't know who and what is after you, there isn't any way that you can deal with this. And so we say, well, Mr. Ford did this, and he did that, and he wrote this, and he wrote that. And Mr. Ford didn't have it. And he had the protocols. So he could put it together that these really are not the little Jewish people out of the Holy Land, or Russia, or Poland, or wherever, Nordic tribes. They first landed in a little Scandinavian country. And I said landed, and they spread from there. So by the time Mr. Ford was writing, it was just after World War I. But the Russian Revolution was over, and everybody could figure out who paid for that one. And see, they come along with terms like Bolshevik. What the hell is a Bolshevik? Everybody would ask. Well, I mean, they're the people in we're not sure who these Bolsheviks are. Oh, well, they're the ones that started the revolution. They must be the peasants. They must be, well, I mean, after all, you had the aristocracy. And these Bolsheviks got rid of the Tsar in what was considered white Russia or a Christian Russian nation, always remembering that Christian has not meant Christ since it was coined at the birth of, to make it handy for what they would accomplish by today in your time. So these people went about taking nations. So by the time they got to Russia, there were a lot of them, and except that they changed their name. This is their method. Change their name. But everyone on the communist board that restructured Russia after the Second World War, the communists, if you will, you see, they also come along and they change their name. They no longer call themselves Bolsheviks. After the Second World War, they became communists. That means communal living. Everybody gets. It doesn't mean a thing. It means the Jews were smart enough to call it something different and confuse the people. And then they proceeded to kill off bunches. They called them, they're Christian, and these Russian people are, oh gosh, they're really bad. They're almost as bad as the Germans. They killed millions of Christians and Judeans. And basically they said, you did it. We're just the persecuted minority. Persecution is always their first claim. And if you think that, well, I'm Jewish and I just don't buy any of this and this is anti-Semitic, let's deal with that confusion. Semitic is any of the races over in those Arab, in that Arab Oriental area, from which most all of us come, from the tribe of Shem. Semitic. So almost everybody from that area, except these people calling themselves Jews, are Semitic. Well, we're not anti us. And since they're not Semitic, how can we be anti them? But they will never tell you truth. Their first order is to confuse and lie. They are the Antichrist. They are headed by Satan himself. And you can't get any more Antichrist than that. So don't get your nose out of joint. And such a concerted effort was made, knowing against this particular day they would have to set up a homeland, and Israel wasn't going to cut it. And right now, they are making every effort to move these elite Jews, Yiddish, out of Israel, and they're moving them over to the U.S. into safety. And then they can get the leadership out just overnight. The minute it looks like, they're going to bomb Iraq, and Iraq may retaliate, they're bringing them in by the thousands every day. They don't have to pass inspection. They don't have to talk to immigration. and they've been doing this for years and years and years. If there is a Russian quota, they will only bring a Russian Christian into the United States, let him in, if there are no more Jews who want to come. Every nation in Europe, when they get to the United States, that you will find they are Jews. So these numbers that you're going to be looking at from time to time, you better start adding. Because today, you're going to start getting some information. And it has to do with the League of Nations, which is important because of what? The contract. Now, I want someone in this room to tell me when Clinton is going to Africa and why.
Tonight.
And what are they telling you?
Making a trip all around Africa.
How long?
12 days, I believe.
Does it strike anybody as interesting? This man, in the height of the assault against him, would just take off and go to Africa? Right after maybe meeting with Kofi Annan. They're out to get him. He looks shocked. You know, he's a bad boy, and his zipper runs both ways. But, man, they took this opportunity. He isn't guilty of very much of anything with little Monica, little innocent Monica. He's not guilty of much of anything with Kathleen Willey, but they gave her a choice. They would see her in prison because her husband embezzled so much money before he killed himself the day that she met with Mr. Clinton. That they will pay off those debts for her, or they'll put her in jail if she just tells a story. Well, I think if you had that kind of a choice and you think maybe jail may mean, you know, blow your head off, probably you could look pretty serious on 60 Minutes. Now let's talk about 60 Minutes. Who interviewed her? Ed Bradley. It was good politics, wasn't it? Mr. Bradley is a gentleman, and he's black. They didn't go to Mike Wallace, did they? That is Israel first, last, and always. Every woman involved in coming forward is Jewish. Does that mean that every woman he touched was Jewish? No. It does not. And he has a black child, and that mother and that child that looks exactly a carbon copy of this man is missing and has been. Now, did they pay her off? Did they kill them? What did they do with them? This is Uglyville. And boy, are they using the blacks. It is so ugly that you just can't absorb it. You may as well just watch it. Try to get as much out of it as you can. And then realize this is the play to pull down your nation. And the one breath that saved you was that Clinton knew if he signed that war document, which is a War Powers Act, it was over for him. And where was Al Gore yesterday and last night? In Los Angeles, and at least toward evening during prime time, was with the American Jewish Committee, giving his presidential speech. And you think there's nothing going on. Just because it looks old and boring, don't turn off those channels. The only way you're going to learn anything is to watch this unfold. I think the best thing to do, EJ, is just start reading, and I'll just start interrupting.
And maybe I won't have to.
That sounds fair.
With this, and maybe you'll want someone to help fill in. It's going to be long and tedious. But I want you to know we're up to the point now talking about Poland and the persecution of the Jews. Now, in the last episode yesterday, the Jews said that over 3,000, 2,500 to 3,000 of these persecuted Jews in Poland had been slaughtered. Well, this just got higher and hotter and bigger. And so the U.S. government sent actually 4 or 5 Jews over there to check on the Jewish situation. And one of them came up with a number. 18 had died, but most of those were in a perfectly legitimate combat situation. Another one came up with, maybe 300, if you really stretched it and counted everybody in the world missing. And you wonder how you got Holocaust figures. And they wanted, remember, 3-4 years ago, they wanted to raise from 6 million, I should have left that, from 6 million Jews killed to 7.5 million. And they couldn't justify it. I mean, even their own couldn't justify it enough. They had to go, they'd leave it at 6. And right now, they're more than that collecting still. In 1998, collecting, and they keep adding to the collection list of those that suffered in the Holocaust. And you're going to find that during the war, the very same thing happened to Germany that happened to Poland. These Khazarian Jews came into Germany, and they're really commercial. And they bought up everything. So the Germans said, no, you're not going to buy any more of Germany. And it became a law that you had to be a natural German citizen to be able to buy anything. Well, guess how many became natural German citizens suddenly? But guess who was put in charge of the concentration camps and sent the little Judeans off into there? Oh, people, this is evil. This is evil. And your land is full of it. And look who they're asking for. Political information. Larry King had Fran the Nanny on there. Well, I don't know. I would really like... Well, I mean, I am on the New York bestsellers list for, I think her book is called Inner Whining. And she doesn't know that I'll leave Clinton alone. But if she had an opportunity with Al Gore, it'd be different. And she had 3 of her, quote, funny comedian friends with her. All vulgar women. You've been taken over. Is it too late to reverse it? Yes. Let me tell you, it is. But if things run smoothly, there are going to be some who are going to start struggling for their life. And Clinton may be one. I don't know if he's smart enough. But he did want to be president. He wanted to do something wonderful. And it didn't involve women. He always had the women. He would like to have been a president worth remembering. And look what they've done. They hit him right where they knew it would destroy him. But they shouldn't have done that. Because now other people in this world have some options. Where if he would just be as strong as he was with the Iraq War, he could turn it around and get them out in a week. Because the rat's nest is all there. See? Or it could gradually be built back, and that's the route we're going to take anyway. You cannot focus first just on the United States. But you go in with whatever you can find with which to work, and you begin to build up the sovereign nation up through what are still sovereign bits of land called reservations. And then we have some pretty elaborate plans and strategies that I'm not going to discuss. But when you move into that, there are going to be very, very few of the natives that are going to be informed enough to be able to start and build some of these things. And man, they don't need white eyes. We're going to have to take hold of each other's hand and walk this journey. Because it's going to have to be white eyes that come in and be able to begin to lay some kind of a foundation, because there's so few who know what's going on and who's done it to them. And there's not a race in the world that will not sell out. The blacks have been the worst. I apologize for that. The Indians fell prey to alcohol and just deterioration and the study dumbing down. The black races are the ones that they have just mutilated, used. They brought them over as slaves, this same bunch of people. Mr. Farrakhan gets up and tries to say this, and he's called an anti-Semite, and they won't let him speak, and he's put down. But it's going to come. They think they're being fundamental Christians. No, they're not. They have been usurped, and it says Judeo-Christian. That means the Judean religion, which is not even Judean. It has nothing to do with Hebrew. It is Yiddish. The language was made for the Talmud. The only thing Hebrew about the language of Yiddish that is so prevalent today that you can look up words in your American dictionary as they become phonetically expressed. They use the Hebrew letters, drawings, but that's all. It was these people's mother tongue, and yet they needed to begin to write things down. So with that background, start to read. We're going to be in Poland.
This is from writing number one. Sunday, March 22nd. How's the volume back there? Okay? Thank you. This is part 45 of The Global Parasites, quoting from the International Jew issue of November the 6th, 1920. Doesn't look right.
It's fine.
Jews use the peace conference to bind Poland. There is one difference between the Polish report of Sir Stuart Samuel and those of the others, which illustrates a difference between the Jewish mind and the general mind. The type of mind represented by the other investigators, Captain Wright, Brigadier General Jadwin, Sir H. Rumbold, and even Henry Morgenthau, is the type of mind which looks behind events for causes. Just a comment that might help here. Sir Stuart Samuel was really the Jewish man in charge of whitewash. Here is, for illustration, trouble between the Jews and other people. It is a continuous situation. There is always trouble between the two. We seldom hear of it, however, until the Jew begins to get the worst of it. As long as the Jew remains on top, making the Gentiles serve the Jewish plan, there is no publicity whatever. The Gentiles may complain as much as they like, may protest and rebel. No international commissions arrive to investigate the matter. Trouble between the Jews and other people is designed as trouble only when it begins to grow inconvenient for the Jew. It is then that he sends the cry of persecution around the earth. Though the plain fact may be that he is only being nipped at his own game. The Poles saw how the Jews clung together in the most admirable teamwork, a minority, absolutely controlling the majority because the minority formed a close corporation and the majority did not. So the Poles said, we will take a leaf out of the Jews' own book. They work cooperatively among themselves. We therefore will work cooperatively among ourselves, which they did. And at once the cry of persecution resounded loud and long. Propaganda was begun against the good name of the Poles. More resentment followed. Regrettable violence ensued. And the dispute still continues. Jewish reports of these disturbances rarely go beyond the fact that Jews are suffering from certain acts of the Polish populace. Incident after incident is given with full detail and with a very apparent journalistic appreciation of horror. Names, dates, places, circumstances are all in order. Very well, it is no part of this article to deny or minimize the suffering of Jews wherever or for whatever cause it may occur. There is nothing whatever to be said in extenuation of injustice inflicted on the humblest human being. The murder of even one person, the terrorizing of even one family, is a very terrible thing to contemplate. It is a great pity that the world has become so accustomed to the piled-up tales of horror that it no longer has any sensibilities left to feel the shame and degradation of these things.